This is Digital Story Podcast number 547, August 30th, 2016. Today's theme is Wi-Fi and GPS. I'm Derek Story. I must admit that in the beginning, cameras that added Wi-Fi and GPS felt more like novelties than real tools. But that was because the initial supporting software and the implementations themselves, well, were a bit crude. But we've come a long ways since those early days. And those radio technologies are very important to my work now. I explain why in today's show. I'm going to start with Wi-Fi because, well, it's everywhere. Isn't it? It's crazy. It's crazy how much we use Wi-Fi, how much we don't think about it, and how helpful it really is. Now, I don't think about the part that there is Wi-Fi everywhere and what sort of effect it's having on my body. I try not to think about that. Every now and then it creeps in. But I'm not going to focus on that right now because the fact of the matter is, it's everywhere, I'm in the middle of it, and that's just the way it is. I was thinking about my boys the other day. They're 19 years old, and they don't know anything but wireless. They each have MacBook Airs. They carry them around in their backpack. They write their term papers on it. They hit the print button, and then downstairs, pages of their term paper just start coming out of the printer. That's all they've ever known. They don't know how it is to have a 2-foot printer cable and have to connect your computer to the printer via that cable and then be stuck there wherever the printer is. That's where you are in order to print a document. Same thing goes for internet connectivity. Obviously, they've never seen a modem, never heard the lovely tones of a modem connecting. All that kind of stuff. Everything is wireless Wi-Fi. And I think that's really fascinating how far we have come with this type of connectivity in such a short period of time. And I think the same can be said for cameras. Now, camera connectivity is a little different than what I'm talking about with printers and internet. It tends to be more device-to-device specific, although obviously you can connect your camera if you have the right stuff to the internet and to social networks and all that kind of stuff. But I think most of us, the way that we use wireless connectivity with our cameras, those of us that have cameras that do that, is from our camera to a specific device, usually a mobile device, usually a smartphone or tablet. That's how I use it most of the time. And I have found this to be very useful because, again, what it's done is that it set me free a bit. Instead of having to wait till I get back to my house or back to my studio to take the memory card out of the camera, to put it into the computer, to launch my photo management software, to import those images, probably having to add some keywords and stuff along the way, and then finally getting to see what I shot on a bigger screen than the little LCD on the back of my camera, that no longer is the necessary workflow. Now what I can do, and I'm sure what you're doing also, or many of you are doing, is I shoot RAW plus JPEG. The JPEGs are available for transfer. They transfer fast. They're lightweight files. They look good because camera manufacturers work very hard on making good-looking JPEGs. I can send it to my iPhone or my iPad, wherever I am, Starbucks or out in the middle of the field, right? Because it is device-to-device connectivity. I don't need another Wi-Fi network. The camera can create its own network. It is its own access point. This was a big breakthrough, by the way, because you may remember early on, the device had to connect to another network in order to make the transfer. Now it creates its own network. And this allows us to be anywhere, except maybe a place where there's a billion other networks that are causing interference. But generally speaking, we can be anywhere and send those images from our camera to our mobile device. And then I can publish on Instagram, on Facebook, on Twitter, wherever I need to, right on the spot. And so I'm more nimble, right? I'm more nimble as a publisher in addition to being more nimble as a photographer. And I love that. I love that. And then when I have time, then I can go to my computer. I can take the card out of the camera and I can put those raw files into Capture One Pro, into Lightroom, into Photos for OS X, whatever I happen to be using for my photo management. And then I can do the whole process of adding keywords and organizing and, you know, all those things that we love to do. Being able to do that when I want, instead of having to do that before I can really use the picture. So that change has come about because of Wi-Fi and because the camera manufacturers have done a great job of not only building good Wi-Fi into the cameras, but also creating good software to support it on our mobile devices. I know some photographers complain, I see it every now and then, well, that's great to my mobile device, but I'd really like to send it to my computer. And there have been, you know, some playing around with that. You can do it. iFi was playing around with it for a while where they had an app where you could send to your computer instead of somewhere else. And I'm sure there are other ways to do it also, probably some that I don't even know about yet. Because I use a Mac, I don't really have to think about that very much because as soon as I send a JPEG to my iPhone, for example, and it goes onto my camera roll, then that image is automatically on my computer too. Because the minute anything hits Photos for iOS, it's also in my Photos for Mac OS X. That's just the way that works. That's iCloud connectivity. So if I wanted to send an image from my camera to my computer, basically all I do is upload it to my iPhone and boom, it's taken care of. And I can just go from there. And then even if I wasn't a Photos user, once it's on my iPhone, then I could use AirDrop, right? And then drop it onto the computer. Although I just like the whole automatic thing where when I do open up my computer, the images are just there waiting for me. And I love that part of it. I also do this with my Panasonic camera, and it works just as well and just as easily. And when I was shooting with a Samsung camera for a while too, their system worked pretty well. So yeah, you know, it almost all the mirrorless cameras now and many of the compacts have this capability. Not to mention DSLRs are coming along. I'm going to talk about a new DSLR in the news piece that follows this that also has two radios built into it. So we'll get to that in a bit. Basically, I think I can say if you have a modern camera, you probably have this capability and the corresponding apps to go with it. And whether or not you publish a lot like I do, you could be on vacation and it's just nice to be able to grab the photos off the camera, put them onto your tablet, and then show them to your family right there. I mean, that is a really terrific capability. Now, that being said, I carry my little mini Lightning SD card connector. I can pull the card out of the camera. I can put it in the Lightning connector, put it into my phone, and then upload that way. And it works great. So the point there being, though, even though that Wi-Fi is wonderful, it's not 100%. And cables tend to be more reliable than wireless radios. So around all of that, I just have to say that Wi-Fi has really become part of my normal workflow. A lot of pictures that you see from me, if you follow me on Instagram and Twitter and go to our Facebook page, all that, most of those pictures came in via Wi-Fi, through a mobile device, and then into photos where I used them wherever I needed to use them. So that's the baseline stuff. That's probably not really big news to most of you, but I wanted to cover it because it goes hand in hand, I think, with GPS, because now we're seeing more cameras have both radios in them. And again, this is an evolution that's happening where we can have both Wi-Fi and GPS in the same device. And I'll give you the Olympus Tough camera as an example. I had the TG1, and it had GPS, but no Wi-Fi, I believe. And then I think they switched, and then it had Wi-Fi, but no GPS, right? You know, they're going, okay, you know, as soon as we put one in, everyone complains about the other. You know, that kind of thing. So finally, when I got to the 4, the TG4, it had both Wi-Fi and GPS, and that's what you need. You really do need both, because once you have Wi-Fi, and this is a big part of the reason why I led off with it, once you have Wi-Fi, you can't go back. You can't. It's just like everything else. I mean, you could take any example you want. Once you have a color TV, you don't want to go back to a black and white TV, right? Once you have something like iTunes, you don't want to go back to compact discs, at least as your only option. So you cannot go backwards with these technologies. And this is what's happened to me with GPS. At first, I was happy to have it when I had it. Originally, you know, I had it in one compact camera, my TG1, even though it didn't have Wi-Fi, so it was still kind of crippled sort of thing. But then when I really got turned on to it was with the iPhone. And as the iPhone became a better camera, its GPS capabilities became more important to me because I could use it as a camera in more situations and have location data in addition to all the connectivity that it has. And I really started relying on the iPhone to capture my geo data. Now, I played around with the adapters for my Canon camera and for some other cameras that didn't have it. And I have to tell you, I don't know what your experience was. I'm talking about GPS adapters. I don't know what your experience was. My experience was that it was a pain in the ass. And I just got so frustrated with it. It was like one of those things. You wanted it to work. You wanted it to be easy. You wanted it to be a nice, streamlined workflow. And it didn't. It didn't do it. And it drove you nuts as a result. So then, instead of having a great time out on the beach in Hawaii, I'm, you know, fiddling around with this thing. And fiddling around with the thing is not what I want to do when I'm in the field. I'll fiddle a little bit in the studio before I go. In fact, I enjoy fiddling in the studio. But once I walk out that front door, I do not want to fiddle anymore. Okay? That's when it needs to work. So the adapters for me, just, I did not like them. I did not like them at all. I did not like using my iPhone as a logger, a GPS logger. That to me is a pain in the ass. And not only that, it ran down my iPhone batteries. And I discovered that really the only way that I like using this is that if it works the way Wi-Fi does, which is it's in there, it's in the device, it has software that supports it, and it just does what it's supposed to do. And that's what the iPhone introduced me to, is GPS working the way that it was supposed to. I have a couple other cameras that do a good job of capturing those geotags for me. The TG4 that I've been talking about does a great job. Now, one of the differences between the TG4 and the iPhone is, and the more I shoot with it, the more I'm, you know, getting a knack for this. The iPhone, you pull it out of your pocket, you take a shot, boom, it has the geotags. You don't have to let it, you know, find the satellites and all that sort of stuff. The thing that I have noticed about the TG4 is that it needs 30 seconds or so from the time I power it up, especially if I haven't been using it for a while, from the time that I power it up to find the satellites, to get the coordinates, and to be ready to go. So I've just got the practice now, since I shoot with it all the time, is that if I pull it out, it's the first time I've shot with it in a while, I pull it out, I hit the info button a couple times to get to the, you know, they have a screen that has everything on it. All the GPS stuff and the time and, you know, it looks cool. It looks like a, you know, a heads-up display for an airplane or something. It's really neat. And I can see what's going on with the GPS, and I can just tell it to refresh. And that's what I do. So I just pull it out, fire it up, tell it to refresh, wait about 30 seconds or so, let it get all set up, then I start taking pictures, and then I know all of my images will be geotagged. What was happening before I got that, before I picked up the knack of doing that, is I pulled out of my pocket, I power it up, I start shooting photos, and like the first four or five photos wouldn't be geotagged, and then the sixth one would, and then on it would. And what happened was that during the course of the first few photos, it found the satellites, it got everything all wired up, and then it was ready to go, you know, by the time I got, you know, six photos into it. That's okay. I understand that. But that's not really what I want. I want everything geotagged. If I'm shooting with a camera that does that, I want everything geotagged. So I now, if I can, I just wait. Now, obviously, if you're doing a quick grab shot, you're going to shoot the shot and then worry about the other stuff later. But, I mean, I'm just talking about I have time. I can wait an additional 30 seconds. So that still isn't quite as slick as the iPhone. Now, another way to go, I've had pretty good luck with this, is the DXO-1 camera, which has a 1-inch sensor that plugs into the Lightning connector on the iPhone. The iPhone becomes the control panel for it, and then you get these really high-quality images, whether RAW or JPEG, with the DXO-1 camera. It's terrific. I love that camera. It is really nice, and the quality is fantastic. And it can geotag your photos also. Now, I have noticed a little bit of the same thing that I experienced with the TG4, even though I have the iPhone connected to it, where the first couple shots might not have the geotags, and then it kicks in. So, you know, now I try to fire it up, and then I haven't really got to the bottom of this, actually. It's interesting. I've been looking for a setting on this, and I haven't found it. It seems to be, it just is what it is. But the fact of the matter is, once it does start logging, then it's very consistent and it will log thereon. And so now I'm getting a very high quality image and I'm getting the geotags. And it fits in my pocket. It's this very nimble device. So those are the main things that I'm using. Now, why am I so high on this geotagging thing? You're going, Derek, what's going on, man? Well, I'll tell you why. And to be honest with you, photos has a lot to do with it, and Capture One Pro has a lot to do with it. I'll start with photos. Photos really knows how to use those geotags. And I think Photos for OS X knows how to use them because at the end of the day, it's really designed as a companion for the iPhone. We can use it for all sorts of stuff, but what it really does well is manage our iPhone images. And so it's natural, since the iPhone's providing us with geotags all the time, that you would have software, the companion software for it, really take advantage of that. Since I've been working with Photos 2 that's going to ship with Mac OS Sierra, I really understand how important geotags can be, because what Photos version 2 is doing with its memories functionality, it is depending on those geotags along with the other bits of information that is collecting, timestamp, faces, all that stuff, to really put together a memory that's based on all these factors. And adding that extra dimension of place really makes the whole thing work so much better. And it's fabulous. It's absolutely fabulous. I know I just finished writing the update to my book, and I'm going to have the paper version of the book come out here real soon. And I became very excited about this software as I was working with it. And I haven't even seen the final version yet. This is very cool. And so what happened is, and then I became addicted to the geotagging stuff, right? Because I just love the way this works. It's the color TV all over again. I don't want to go back. Because I want every photo, you know, geotagged now, or at least I want a photo in that album or collection geotagged. Same thing happened with Capture One Pro. I was going, it's not really big on geotagging. Well, I go over to the info panel, and that information is there. That location information is there. and I click on a little arrow, and it takes me to a beautiful Google map where the location of my shot's pinpointed. And it's fabulous. And I go, God, I love this. I want this for every shot. Now, the reason why I'm talking to you about all of this is because GPS should be on your radar as you begin to shop for new equipment. I'm really hoping that the next version of the Olympus OMD EM1, the Mark II, I'm pretty sure it's going to be a Mark II, I hope it has both Wi-Fi and GPS built into it. I think it really needs to. And I think we need to see this, you know, from that level of cameras. Because what I have to do now with my EM5 Mark II, a camera I adore, find myself grabbing an iPhone shot or a TG4 shot so I can have a geotagged image in the same album with all the other shots. As I said earlier, you get to where I don't want to do that anymore. I just want everything geotagged, because all my systems work so well with it. So I'd really like to see this in the next wave of cameras. I want it on your radar, because I think when you see the next version of photos, you start playing with it in Capture One. Obviously, Lightroom can handle geotagging very well. As soon as you really start to see what it can do for you, you're going to want it more and more. And you're probably going to want it in your next camera that you depend on and that you use a lot. Right now, if you're shooting with a smartphone, you can start playing with it right away. You don't need to wait for the next camera. But I think it's a big deal. I think it has evolved to the point now to where it is useful, not just a novelty, not just something that's fun for geeks to play with, but something that has real application. And we're going to see all the software really begin to leverage it. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun over the next couple of years to see GPS really come into its own on all of our devices. I want to make sure that you're right there at the edge of the curve as it all happens. In the news, the Canon 5D Mark IV includes built-in GPS. You ever notice how I do that? It just all connects, doesn't it? This is really good, what Canon did here. You know, I posted a piece on Digital Story, I think last week, who is the Canon 5D Mark IV for? And, you know, I kind of listed some typical things. People who haven't upgraded for a while. I would be a good candidate with my 5D Mark II because, you know, how long has it been since I bought a DSLR? I'd be a good candidate. People starting out their freelance business or their professional business, especially if they were event photographers, travel photographers, portrait photographers. You know, it's a great camera for all of that sort of stuff. But I think the fact that they've included GPS in this camera, just exactly what I was talking about in the previous story. It's in there. It's part of the menu system. It's just part of the camera operating system. That is a big deal. Let me read you from the Canon site a little bit about this. For news photographers capturing hundreds or even thousands of images while moving around throughout the day, landscape photographers on location, and even photographers on vacation, GPS has become an indispensable part of the daily workflow. Sound familiar? The EOS 5D Mark IV camera's built-in GPS helps photographers and filmmakers both tag their images with critical location data and also adjust the time and timestamp on the camera automatically, which is, by the way, very cool. I love that. Something else that my iPhone does that I wish all my other cameras did. Featuring both built-in GPS and Wi-Fi technology, the EOS 5D Mark IV can use GPS and WFT, wireless file transfer, instead of WTF, which is something else, a whole different technology, making it easy to upload numerous images and movies both quickly and from increasingly distant locales. Compatible with American GPS satellites, Russian GLONASS satellites, and Japanese quasi-zenith satellites, the EOS 5D Mark IV GPS information stays reliably accurate in many locations. And then remember the part where I was saying it's like built into the operating system? It has two modes even. Mode 1, I believe, keeps the GPS on even when the camera is turned off. And this prevents that delay that I was talking about with the TG4, with the Olympus TG4. Part of the problem I have that delay is that when I power down the TG4, right, everything goes off. The radios go off, the whole deal. So therefore, when I power it back up, it doesn't know where it is. So then it has to fire up the GPS, has to find the satellites, triangulate, do all that sort of stuff. Takes a few seconds to do that, and then once it does, then it can give me those geotags. One of the options that you have with the 5D Mark IV is that, I think, mode 2, when you power down the camera, you're powering off the GPS also, which would save on battery life. And I think that's probably the main reason why they would have that, to save on battery life. However, if you're working in the field, if you're on location, if you're a photojournalist, and you don't know when the next shot is going to present itself, you want that GPS working just like it does, well, with the iPhone, so that you turn on the camera, you shoot the shot instantly, you want those geotags also. And so it also has a mode for that. And probably the trade-off is, as I mentioned earlier, you have to have maybe an extra battery or so with you, because probably over time, you're going to use your batteries faster with those GPS radios on all the time. Hats off to Canon to incorporating both a high level of GPS and Wi-Fi technologies in this camera that suddenly makes it, for DSLR shooters, a really terrific location camera and travel camera. Super high image quality, fast autofocus, great video capture. I mean, really, you're talking about one device that does a lot of stuff now. And then it works with all the existing Canon lenses that you have. So anyway, I'm jazzed about the 5D Mark IV having this, not only for the camera itself, but also because I just feel like it's a trend that's really starting to get some traction that I'm excited about. All right, I have some Hedge news for you. Hedge, they're going to be at IBC in Amsterdam, September 9 through 13. So those of you that go to the IBC show, lucky you, right? I have never been to Amsterdam. I so want to go. And I wouldn't mind going to this show either. But they're going to be there September 9 through 13. Now, I know that not all of you are going to be able to go to IBC, but there's another reason why I'm telling you about this. And that reason is that Hedge is teaming up with Lassie at the show to give away a Lassie 12 big array. This is, I mean, I don't know if you've seen a picture of this thing. It's the 12 is for like 12 slots, 12 hard drives that you can configure for 48 terabytes, 72 terabytes, or 96 terabytes with enterprise class drives, 24/7 operations, 5-year warranty. Wow. Here's the thing. You don't have to go to the show to enter. You can go through a page that Hedge has put up to enter this contest. We all like to say, if I had this, I would never have to buy another one in my life. This actually might be true with this device, with the 12 big, right? They're also giving away 25 Hedge Pro licenses. So that's also very cool. I mean, there's $99 right there. So here's what you have to do. I got the link in the show notes, or if you've got a great memory, just do hedgeformac.com, H-E-D-G-E, formac.com/IBC. Go to that page and you'll see a link there to enter this drawing. Put your name in the hat. You get super lucky. You might win the array, the Lassie. You get very lucky and you might win a Hedge for Mac Pro license. I'd take either one, in all honesty. And just to refresh about Hedge, remember, this software is the fastest app for importing and backing up media on Mac OS. You can import multiple sources to multiple destinations at the same time. And every file copied by Hedge is cross-verified with the original. So normally I would send you to hedgeformac.com/TDS, but for the next, all the way up until the 13th of September, why don't you go over to hedgeformac.com/IBC, enter that contest. If you win the array, you got to let me know, and then we'll take it from there. All right, Hedgeformac, terrific software, really nice guys, and they're going to be at IBC in Amsterdam. Oh, I want to go so badly. Well, speaking of large storage devices, I'm going to be adding a feature for the next few weeks called the Drobo Diaries. Our friends over at Drobo have something new called the 5DT, and the T stands for Turbo. I'm going to tell you a little bit more about it in a second, but I'm going to tell you what the Drobo Diaries is about, is that I have one of these, just unpacked it. I'm going to begin integrating it into my workflow. And I've got some different options that I'm mulling over. You know, I love the planning part of this sort of stuff, but I got some different options that I'm mulling over on how I'm going to integrate it into my workflow. And then I'm going to be reporting on that in the Drobo Diaries. So just for a little bit, we're going to do this together. Now, you may recall when I first got the Drobo 5D way back when, it's been a while now, I did the same thing. And it was a lot of fun, and I got a lot of comments and questions about it, and we had a good time. Just so you know, by way of backstory, that original Drobo 5D that I wrote about and did the diaries for on the podcast, it's still running strong. It's still absolutely running strong. I use it all the time. I've replaced, I think, 3 of the drives in it. I had no problem. Basically pulled out, you know, one drive, put in a brand new one so I could upgrade it. It reconfigured itself and then was ready to go. So the expandable part of it worked fantastic. It's been reliable. It's been fast. It's been a workhorse. And so doing that now and having that thing running for a couple years now without even a hiccup really then has given me the confidence to move forward with this 5DT and even put more stuff on there. And that's exactly what I'm going to do. Let me tell you a little bit about the 5D Turbo, though, just so we can all get oriented before I really start digging in and integrating it or figuring out how I'm going to integrate it. This is even faster than my 5D. It has Thunderbolt 2 and USB 3 connectivity. You can choose either one. The I/O on this, it's got a nice big pipe, okay? Now, in addition to that, it supports 4K Thunderbolt connected displays. It includes a mSATA card for increased performance of up to 30% on streaming video and 3x read performance via Drobo's hot data cache. What the card is RAM, so that we have very fast storage for the stuff that you're working on in addition to the stuff that's on the drives. I have that cache card on my 5D, and it makes all the difference in the world. I don't think you want to get a Drobo without it, just to tell you the truth, if you care about performance. The Turbo also includes 3 years of Drobo Care support. That's included now. There's also some other goodies too. It doesn't just protect from drive failures. It also includes a battery backup system that protects all data in memory or cache. So it's enterprise-grade data protection on the 5DT. So if the power spontaneously goes away, the Drobo stays alive long enough for the data to be written to disk, ensuring your important information is always safe. The onboard battery recharges itself, and it is designed to last the life of the product. Now, this is really cool because the one vulnerability I had before was, what if something happens during read-write? What if power goes out or, you know, whatever? Well, now we're protected from that too. So I'm really excited about this. So I'm working on my plan right now. What I'm thinking that I want to do is take my existing 5D, transfer everything that's on it over to the new one, the 5DT, then take my 5D to the house and have it off-site, and then have the 5DT here. That's what I'm leaning towards, but I'm still working out the details. I'll keep you posted. I think that's going to do it for today. I got a couple updates. One, I just wanted to remind you about the B&H and Amazon tiles that I have on the digital story. They're in that second column that runs right next to the stories. They're down just a little bit. It's a B&H ad. It's an Amazon ad. If you're going to buy something from either of those places, if you just go over to the digital story first, click on either one of those tiles. It'll take you over to their site, take you over to whatever is going on with the tiles. And then you just search for what you want and, you know, go shopping. Just by doing that one extra step, you really help support the site. And I really appreciate it. And then speaking of support the site, I want to tip my hat to all the members of our inner circle via Patreon. It's such a big deal to me, and it just feels so good. Those of you that have signed up to support the digital story, I appreciate it. I will keep telling you how much I appreciate it. And there's going to be some new stuff coming your way. We finished up with the Nimble Photographer podcast season one, but I'm working on something new for you. Stay tuned. Keep an eye on your Patreon site, and God bless you. And finally, I want to thank our friends over at Red River Paper. And I think about you guys all the time. I've been talking a lot lately about making proof prints, which is something that I do when I do a commercial shoot. I'm in the middle of some commercial shooting right now. And even though I deliver the files to the client digitally, before I send off that job to them, I make a couple prints on Red River paper, usually 8x10, and I see how they look. I see how they look because when I see the image on paper, I see things differently than when I'm just staring at the screen. And I tell you, I have found things when I make those proof prints on Red River paper before I send the files off to the client that I go, oh my God, I am so glad that I caught that. And then I go back, I fix the files, and then I send them off. So making those prints, just a few prints, I don't print every image. I take a sample. I end up printing maybe 4 or 5. I take a good look at it. Seeing it on paper really helps me see the image in another way. And I cannot tell you what a confidence builder it is seeing those proofs and then sending the digital file off to the client. It has to do with exposure, has to do with color, has to do with all the stuff that you may have missed while staring at your computer screen. Just another way that having an inkjet printer full of Red River paper can save your bacon. I know we talk a lot about the artistic stuff, but this everyday thing, the safety net for your deliverables, is a big deal because remember, it's your reputation at stake here. You don't want to be delivering files that have boo-boos in them just because you didn't see them. So we have a tile on all the pages of the digital story. Take you over to the Red River site. We have our own landing page there. And then remember, they have a great Facebook page, facebook.com/redriverpaper. It's going to do it for this week. Cannot tell you how much I've enjoyed spending this time with you, working on some great stuff for next week. And, you know, play around with this GPS stuff if you haven't been doing. Don't play around with it too much because you'll get hooked. But, you know, stay up to speed. All right. See you next time. Bye-bye.